Welcome back, TNT. We're inside the second hour of Human Impact. And today we are speaking with Miss Marsha Huggins. She's an educator with over 22 years experience, and she began her teaching career at the new established Corinth Sixth Form College in 2001. Her teaching appointment was at the Marabella South Secondary School, where she functioned as an English teacher and acting dean. And today we're talking about the back to school wish list. As we know, the kids are preparing to go back to school as much to their chagrin, and they wish that they could stay, you know, at home a little longer. Welcome back to the studios of Freedom 106.5 FM, Ms. Huggins. How are you?
Hi, good morning. Good morning to you and your team, and Happy New Year to all of you at Freedom 106.5 and as well as your listeners. Thanks very much for having me this morning.
Yeah, so we're talking about the wish list for teachers. I know it's a pretty extensive one. Is this a new list or is it like a pre-existing one for 2024?
A combination of both. So let me start first with the promised increase in salaries and back pay for teachers. Mm-hmm. We still have a significant number of teachers who have not been able to receive the arrears from the newly implemented salaries that were promised to them by December 31st. Today is January 1st, 2024. So some persons have still not been in receipt of what is owed to them. We've gotten numerous complaints. I've had people tag me on posts on Facebook, call, message. We try to get as much information as possible from the Ministry of Education, but none was publicly forthcoming. Mm-hmm. We would have gotten some, those of us officers who would have reached out would have gotten some information from some of the persons who we have contact with there, but there has been nothing official that has been released from the Ministry of Education with regard to why the promise of December 31st was not honored for the supposed 10% of those who did not have their issues worked out before the end of the year 2023. So that is a sore point for many teachers who will be heading back out to school. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would in some way affect performance come the new term?
For some it may, because I mean it is a very disheartening thing when we already had to wait a significant period of time for us to be able to actually enjoy the little pittance that has been given to us, even though they said that we agreed to this thing. It was something that was kind of forced upon us. Mm-hmm. And now to wait even longer without an explanation as to why. Now we knew, I believe a lot of people understood and knew that the timeline that was given by the state for this to happen was on an unrealistic timeline. However, they said that they were going to do it. There's some persons who got and some persons who did not get. We also still have persons who maybe only for whatever different reasons, they also would be persons who would not have access to that funding or that money at this time, as well as retirees, persons who would have retired during the period in question and even up to recent retirees. So those persons, all of these are people who would not have had access or would not have been able to get their monies by the promised time. So people are I'm using a very politically correct term.
A very light term.
Mm-hmm. They're very light term, but some are very angry and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that, you know, when you have the expectation that something will come to you and then it doesn't come and then nothing is forthcoming from the authorities.
Yes, no explanation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could be very, people feel disrespected, people feel saddened and taken for granted. And many times, especially given the way that sometimes the Ministry of Education operates, sometimes people feel, you know, taken for granted and that we are, our work as educators is not taken seriously.
And seeing as there are so many issues, especially when you were in studio with me the last time, we were talking about the state of students and their behavior, discipline, and the many challenges that teachers are facing on a day-to-day basis. I can understand the exuberance and the excitement to go back to work has been cut down drastically.
In some cases, it's not there for some people. And as I said, rightfully so, because you have been giving of yourself human service. Of course, in every profession, you would have one or two bad apples, but that is not a reflection of the majority of the service. And when you would have put out what you need to put out and you have things that are owed to you and it's not being paid, that is something that can break any spirit. So I know there will be a lot of teachers heading back out to work tomorrow, very disgusted, disenchanted, upset, angry, because what was owed to them still has not been paid.
And this would also include increments, because I know that according to your wish list, you've had that topic on the list as well, yes?
Increments, yes, that is one. Increments and upgrades, they're kind of tied together. So usually, for those of us who work in the public service, once you work over an extended period of time, every year or every other year, depending on where you fall within the salary scale or where you fall in terms of years of service, you're entitled to a yearly increment once you would have once your staff confidentials or staff reports would have been completed. You have persons who are sitting in the service who have not had staff reports. Staff reports have been completed, but they have not gotten the increments due to them for quite a few years. There was an attempt in 2022 to have some of that rectified, but it didn't happen for everyone. So in addition to this new salaries that would have been implemented, some of them would have gotten the increase at their incorrect incremental point. So this is not just one set of monies that is owed to some of these teachers. It would be maybe two, sometimes three, if you were upgraded from one teaching post to another. That's also another increase in salary that is owed to them. Some persons have been upgraded and have never received the correct salary. They're still being paid at their old salary. So the new salaries would have been applied at their old salary. So you can imagine the amount of money that we're talking about here for some persons.
I'm trying to keep track of what you're saying presently. How is it possible for teachers and for the association to keep track of all of these changes?
Well, that's our job. That's what we do. Once you're in the service, there are certain expectations, things that must happen. So, for instance, if you come in, there are a lot of anomalies as well. It's going to take a lot longer than an hour to try to explain some of that. And I can't tell you with regard to the increment issue. If persons are not paid the increments when it's owed to them, then it is something that is accumulated. And one of the things that we must understand in the public service, once money is owed to a public officer amounts to over a certain amount of money, I think it used to be $5,000. I'm not sure if it's still that money, that amount must be audited before any processing must take place, before the person gets their money. So you can imagine with a service of over 14,000 teachers, the nightmare it would have been to try to even work out implementing new salaries and working out arrears for that, because it takes the financial accountability that must take place for that in order for persons to get what is owed to them. It's a long process, which is why the timeline that was given by the government was an unrealistic one. But a promise was made and they felt that they needed to keep it, but it wasn't kept for everyone. And again, that's where the disgruntled
feelings coming from.
Yes.
How does leave classification affect the process that you just explained before? Tell us first, what is leave classification and what are the things that are expected from tutor in terms of this classification?
Right. So leave classification has mainly to do with sick leave and extended sick leave. What happens when you apply, let's say, as a public, as a teacher, you may go outside of your 14 allotted days. For whatever reason, you may be a cancer patient, you may have some sort of, you may have been in an accident, some sort of health issue, and it forces you into extended sick leave. Now, extended sick leave, if it's not classified in a timely manner, depending on the leave on how the leave has been classified, the teacher will either be paid at full salary, half salary, or no salary. What happens is that they take so long, in some cases years, to work this thing out. And if you have any loss of earnings, you're supposed to be able to claim it back from the National Insurance Board. But if it takes too long to be classified, by the time you get to the National Insurance Board, you would have lost out, and then you become indebted to the state. So let's say, for instance, you may have a patient, somebody who is a cancer patient. They may have been off of the job for about a year because they were doing chemotherapy or anything like that. And then 5 years down the road, they classify the person's leave as no pay leave. They would have been paying the person at their regular salary all that time, and now telling them that they have to repay the state. Now, if it is you lose earnings, you can, because you are paying NIS, you can go there and claim. But if it is outside of the stipulated period in which you can claim, then that causes a problem. So leave classification is a serious bugbear for us. We have a lot of teachers who have been disenfranchised because of how long it takes for them to classify that leave a person to get what is owed to them.
All right. And from leave classification, we're talking about confirmations. Now, can you explain confirmations for me? Because from my understanding, that has a very big part to play in the type of leave classification or classification in general. And then it would apply to salaries, not so?
Confirmation has to do with permanency in the service. So if it is somebody wishes to apply, let's say they wish to be promoted, if they, in some cases, if they're not, if they have not been confirmed, it's going to be difficult for them to access an interview whenever interviews come around. And it also has implications for when the person retires. If they have not been confirmed, then that causes problems with calculation of gratuity and benefits, superannuation benefits for that teacher. So that also has implications. So it's a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I would have given a list, I would have sent a list to you, but even in that list, it doesn't quite encapture everything that we have to treat with or that our teachers face on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I'm also seeing that online education has been forefront at the minds of teachers. Can you say that online education would relieve some of the transport stress for children and teachers and give us some sort of relief to the functioning in schools?
It would, but we remember we have to deal with, we're dealing with parity and equity. So for instance, if it is we just apply online education across the board without considering the means by which people are able to access, we sometimes think about students who may not have access, but we also have teachers who may not have access depending on where they live. Mm-hmm. May not have connection in the areas that in which they live. Students, they may come from circumstances where they may not be able to afford devices or be have access to connectivity. So there are a lot of considerations. It's not as though the association is against online education. We know that the world is heading towards an online interface for many things.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is, we are considering going that way and we have a policy that has to be built out, we have to have all of those factors, all of those things taken into consideration. You also have to consider terms and conditions of teachers. When teachers were hired, online, anything in most cases didn't even exist. What may happen if it is you just implement this, it may impact on people's terms and conditions of employment. And that all of that is stuff that we have to consider.
And so that would fall under the category of confirmations as well, yes?
Yeah.
And what are some of the factors that you would like the Ministry of Education to take into account if they do move forward with implementing online education in a more deeper aspect? Especially as we saw that in some cases it did help during COVID, but as you mentioned before, the accessibility was an issue. What are some of the factors you would like them to consider?
Now, it may have helped during COVID in terms of allowing education to continue, but we do know that there was a significant learning loss during that 2-year period that children were away from school, mainly because some children did not have access. They either didn't have devices, connectivity, both. You also had some teachers who would have had challenges. And remember, school is supposed to be in a physical space. When you convert a home, we don't know what homes anyone is coming from, whether it's the children or the teacher. Mm-hmm. People may be coming from abusive environments, not ideal for learning, because you know the classroom is ideally supposed to be an ideal place for learning. You also have the factor, especially for younger children, of learning through social interaction. And for many children who would have started their school life during COVID, that did not exist. So you have a lot of children going back out when they had gone back out to school and even heading into school now, that have issues with adjusting to social interaction with others and learning how to respect others, how to work collaboratively with others, and so on. So online education has to take all of those things into consideration. It's not just simply saying, all right, school is closed because there's a health and safety issue, so go online. It's not as simple as that. It may seem as simple as that for many people, but there are many things that you have to consider. You have some people who simply cannot just go online just like that. You understand? And then there are some children who can't, who have difficulty learning and accessing information through that forum. They need to be in a physical space with someone who will be able to guide them through. And then there are some subject areas where the practicality of teaching online is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about some of the practical subjects, the visual and performing arts, technical and vocational subjects and so on. It's difficult. You can demonstrate by using the camera, but sometimes the best demonstration is what the child can see in front of their face and interact and ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then connectivity, online engagement has its own set of issues. People drop off. You may lose your feed. Bandwidth may not be available. We have all kinds of considerations. So if it is we are going that way, and I'm almost certain we are, we have to really sit down and carefully build out what we'd like to see and how it can benefit not just the children, but how it can enhance the performance or the output of the teacher before we actually say, well, yes, we're implementing this just because we want it.
Mm-hmm.
It must be something that is carefully thought out and built out properly. And with the policy that is there, have all of the instruments, all of the things that plug into that policy to ensure that it works properly.
And I guess this would have some effect on the syllabus that is planned during the year by teachers to affect that change.
Yes, because teaching online requires different a different interface as opposed to planning lessons for the physical classroom. You have more things to consider. You have to consider, as we say, in communication noise,
mm-hmm.
meaning anything that interrupt the process of delivery of your lesson. And it could be anything, because with the online interface, there are many things you don't have control over as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
right? So the building of a lesson or the planning of a lesson, the planning of a scheme of work for the term or for the year will involve different elements that will allow the teacher to be able to effectively carry out their duty in the classroom.
All right, and moving on to the next topic, acting appointments. What does that entail, and what are some of the issues you've encountered with acting appointments?
Well, we have many actors in the system right now. You have a lot of vacancies, particularly in middle management and upper management. So you will go to schools. There are many schools across the country, both denominational schools as well as government schools, where you have persons who are in administrative positions who are acting, and sometimes for years.
Mm-hmm.
Principals, vice principals, senior teachers, heads of departments, and deans, both at the primary and secondary school. Some of those posts don't exist in both schools, but you have a lot. I was one of those who would have functioned as an acting middle manager, as a dean, while I was at Maribel Assault Secondary. And you have many of those. In some cases in schools, you have the majority of persons who are sitting in management positions are acting in those positions because it is taking so long for interviews to be held and persons to be appointed. That affects it affects persons in different ways. So for instance, if the appointment is not confirmed in a timely manner, acting allowances are not paid to teachers. In some cases, if it is you are in a denominational school, if the recommendation from your denominational board doesn't come in time or doesn't come at all, the acting appointment may not be ratified, or your acting allowances may not be paid. And that has implications for if somebody retires in a post like that. So for instance, you may have a principal or a vice principal who would retire as an acting person if it is those things have not been ratified before they retire. It will affect the calculation of their superannuation benefits in retirement. So there are lots of implications for those things.
Mm-hmm. And just the feeling of permanency and stability is also affecting performance in terms of mental capacities, not so? Because if it is you're saying acting, right, it's almost like, you know, you could lose that position at any point in time.
Well, an acting position is not a guarantee that you will be confirmed or appointed in the post. You still have to go through the process of being interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's law throughout the public service. Even if you're acting in a position, it doesn't give you the right or the claim to that position. It would give you maybe, it may give you an advantage at the interview because you would have been performing the duties, so you will know exactly what is required of you, or at least you should know what is required of you. So when they ask particular questions, in your interview will know how to respond, but it doesn't give you a legal claim to the position. But it is also unfair to ask persons, I've known of persons who have acted, I acted as dean for about 3 or 4 years. I've known persons who would have acted in positions for up to 9 or 10 years and not get the opportunity to be interviewed, or they retire before they get the opportunity to be appointed, or things like that. Those are current realities, I suppose, not just in the teaching service, but throughout the public service. But of course, we're dealing with teaching here, all right? Mm-hmm. Of course, that can affect persons' morale, their commitment and exuberance towards their jobs and so on. And also, it also can stunt or stymie schools. Because if you're acting in a position, you may be reluctant to make pertinent decisions that may affect or impact on your school because you're acting. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to rock the boat because at any point in time, somebody could come down on you. You know, so those are the kinds of things. It's not just about the physical thing of somebody acting. It also has a lot of mental and emotional implications that are attached to that.
And also in the long run affects the children of the school.
Yes, because if you don't have a management in place, I mean, the children may not necessarily know. But if it is a staff feels as though they can't move forward because you have most of the persons who are there acting and people are afraid to commit to decisions, that can impact on the running of the school and the ultimate performance of the school going forward.
As we're looking into 2024, seeing as what 2023 brought to us and seeing as school violence was a huge topic, what are some of the roles that parents can take, and what are the roles that you would like to see them take up more vigorously coming in for 2024?
That's a loaded question.
I wouldn't say loaded, but I know that, let's say we want parents to be taking a more active role. Can you give us some of the wish list ideas that you, in the roles that the parents should take on?
It shouldn't just be simply an active role. It should be a positive active role. Mm-hmm. I think many times, sometimes we as a society kind of fall down on the parenting, and this is not an indictment against anybody per se. Sometimes we feel that the child is in school, so let the school deal with that. And we don't understand the concept of the village, or we don't appreciate or apply the concept of the village or the community raising the child. And we also have to be cognizant of what kind of community you want to raise your children. So we have, that's a multi-pronged approach. It's not just parents or the school. It may also involve communities from which children come from. Some of these communities may not necessarily be conducive to raising the kind of young people or kind of students we want to see. But of course, when we talk about discipline, and values, that has to start at home. Whatever it is you allow your child to absorb or you teach them from home is what they will bring into the school environment. Mm-hmm. If it's positive, the child will bring that into the school environment. If it's negative, they will also bring it there because that is what they know. So we have to be mindful. We have to be, as a society, more mindful of what we expose our children to at all levels, in the home, in the community, at school. To get the kind of results that we want to see, it's going to be a painstaking, long process for us to undo some of the things that we have seen over the last few years. Mm-hmm. But it's not impossible, but we have to commit as a society to do that. So it's not just parents alone, it's everybody in terms of what we really want our children to become.
Mm-hmm. And going to the topic now of safe schools and health and safety issues, what is the stance of TUTOR in that respect?
I don't think it's just TUTOR, but for us, we want a safe environment for our teachers and our children. We would have had numerous, last year, the year started off with a lot of health and safety issues that kept schools closed, in some cases for indefinite periods of time. Some schools are scheduled to be demolished and rebuilt. Some schools had to shut down for a bit. Some schools are in areas where the accessibility to the school based on the road work. So we have, for example, what happened in Maracas over the weekend.
Over the weekend, yes.
The road collapse. There are schools up inside there. mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Teachers have to access the school. Students have to access the school.
There's how another school that was burnt
down just at the end of last term. Mm-hmm. Arrangements, that's another issue that might be a headache for us, because communication didn't come in the way that it should have come, where those children are going to be placed and where the teachers are going to be placed. And that's an issue that we're going to probably have to treat with this week. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of those kinds of incidents. Some of them don't make the news, mm-hmm. right? And I think it has a lot to do with the length of time that it takes the Ministry of Education to treat with issues when they come up. Sometimes they wait until the schools are in such a state of disrepair that in some cases you just have to close the school. Mm-hmm. We want safe schools for our children. We want safe schools for our teachers, because a safe school, the working environment of the teacher is the classroom environment of the child. And if it is, it's not safe for them, effective education can't take place. So we would like the Ministry of Education to pay more attention to that. I know they always cry that money is the issue, but we need to be able to schedule things the way that we need to schedule them to ensure that our schools are safe, physically safe for our children and our teachers.
And which will be beneficial to the health of the children and the health of the teachers as well, mentally and physically.
Physically. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Schools are safe zones for all members of school community with the necessary national security support. What is your position on that topic?
Well, this ties back into what we just talked about just before, the health and safety issue with school violence and how we can improve or how we can move away from that model. If the school is used as a touch point for that kind of development, for the community to be able to connect with each other, what you do is you're building a community that would positively impact on the environment in which it is in. So for instance, for those of us who would have grown up last century, I'm saying that because some of us would have been around then, right?
Mm-hmm.
The school was like the hub of the community, right? Mm-hmm. If there's a school bazaar, everybody in the community
comes out,
pitches
yes.
in. Mm-hmm. Not just comes out, but contributes to the success of that bazaar. So you'll have a parent who would make ice cream and sell. Somebody will bring bottles for the brand, or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that in itself builds a community. So people bought into what the school was. It wasn't just a place of learning. It was a place of development. It was a place of communal activity. If we create in many cases, people just look at the school as a place where children go to from 8 to 2,
mm-hmm.
and they leave.
Miss Huggins, I'm losing you just a little bit. Can you...
I'm so sorry. Are you hearing me better now?
Yes, I'm hearing you much better now.
Fine. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
If we create these zones where the school is more than just a place where the children go and we hold them there until, Monday to Friday,
mm-hmm.
And they become these spaces where they can be used for different things. Of course, you'll have to put the proper legislative framework and supportive systems like police and so on in place for that to happen. I think people will buy more into what the school is and why we do what we do. There are some schools that actually do practice that already, and there's a lot of parental involvement. There's a lot of community involvement. Civil society involvement in those schools and their projects, but we need to have more of those that will allow children to see that school is not just this place where they hold me for Monday to Friday, but it's a place where I can grow.
Can you give one example of a project so that the public can get an idea as to what is probably needed and how to create that project in their community?
All right, so I know they are non-governmental organizations, so I'll use an example of one that I have worked with for some years.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Heroes Foundation. That particular NGO would usually go into schools. They would target schools where they feel that they can do youth development with young people between the forms of 1 and 3, right? And what they will do is the school will choose which students participate in it, and these children will be involved in different kinds of projects. So while I was there, we would have had community outreach projects where we would have decided, like for Christmas, we want to reach out to an orphanage or an old folks home. Sometimes they will do beach cleanups. They will do different things. So when they come into the school, it's not just to come to school, but they are involved in things that will help build the communities from which these schools exist. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you're not just seeing the school as a school where these children fighting on the road, but you will also see the school where these children contributing positively to the community that they're in. And the community now respects what the school is doing and adds to what the school is doing. So when we talk about building those kinds of communities, that's what we're talking about. We're not just talking about doing particular kinds of activities, but it's sort of symbiotic, mm-hmm. where the school does something to impact positively on the community, and the community then gives back to allow the school to continue its work, and you can use the school as a base for where this work can continue.
And
I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does, actually. It will encourage some of the community members to come out and help with the school as well, seeing they may have skills that they can impart knowledge to the children. And it fosters pride in their community.
And in the school, too, because there are some schools that have a negative stigma attached for whatever reason for years, because they say the children behave badly or, they're disruptive and all of that. But sometimes you just need something to spark these children's interest in, have a musical orchestra, choir, something that will engage the children differently, and something that they will be able to engender pride. I was able to see in the school that I worked at, because the school has always been a little bit of a troublesome school, and yes, all schools are, but because we've allowed the children to express themselves in the ways that they are comfortable, through music, through the arts, through craft, through community service, these children are happy to do these things. And the school is now building a profile where they're not just identified as them bad children in the back there.
Yeah.
But they're doing good things, and the community is proud that the school exists in their community. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about using the school as that hub of building or fostering positive community development.
All right, well, let's talk about any last-minute ideas or wishes that you may have wanted to add to the list that we're hoping the needful ears do hear and bring you good luck for 2024.
Again, I will reiterate two major things that would be of major concern to us, and it was in the list already, that the back pay. We need to, the ministry needs to be a little more forthcoming with regard to what is happening there. Teachers are disgruntled. They are disgruntled, not just with the ministry, they're disgruntled with everybody because they didn't get what was due to them. Mm-hmm. Something needs to be said there. And also, safe schools. I am almost certain that there will be some schools tomorrow that will not open because of health and safety issues. And these are not health and safety issues that cropped up overnight or cropped up today. These are things that are pre-existing that is known, that was already known to the Ministry of Education. We need to do better for our children. We need to be able to ensure that they are in safe, comfortable, productive environments so that they can produce the way that we expect them to produce. And we also want our teachers to be safe so that they can go out and do their jobs the way that they would like to. When it's uncomfortable, they can't. Mm-hmm. So those are the two things that I would reiterate more than anything else. I mean, all that we discussed this morning is important, but those two, yes.
Definitely important. All right, thank you so much, Miss Huggins, for taking the time to talk to us about your wish list for 2024. And I wish you the very best of luck as the school term reopens.
Thank you so much. All the best to you and your team for 2024 and beyond. Have a blessed day, everyone.